We're here to talk about billion-dollar insights on why AI fails and human innovation wins. And I'm really pleased to be joined by Katz Keeley, a 20-year transformation pioneer who has driven large-scale change for the UN, the BBC, and GSK, to name a few. And I'm also joined by Stephen J. Manning, who built a billion-dollar marketing business.
How's leadership? Cast your point different today than it was yesterday, and what it must be. I mean, it's just the top line idea is that, you know, the old the leaders have the vision, they have the foresight, they're there, you know, they're present, they're Nostradamus soothsayers. And this is what I think. Now you guys go and do this. You guys execute. Okay. Now there are a couple. Fundamental issues, many. My question often, and I have clients who look at me a little bit bewildered. The only successful leader today is the leader that also has exceptional management skills. You need to know how the darn thing actually works, what it's supposed to do, why does it do it, and then you can control the environment. And you can track the progress of the company. Otherwise, you're sitting isolated with a halo over your head, listening to Ravi Shankar playing this, playing music. You're not leading the enterprise. And by the way, very critical that if you're not involved with the motor parts of the enterprise, you're not developing leaders. You're developing people who follow you because you have the checkbook. You have a dictum. You lead by threat. You lead by money. If you're totally, let's say, a fair leader, you wake up one morning and find out the buildings are no longer there. So it's about people. Now, there are a couple, top-down failures. I had the opportunity, you'll forgive me, to say to a reasonably sized company, at some point after 2 days of mind-bending discussions, I said, I have a question. What is it you do here? You make cars. What do you do here? And then I got some of the most amazing responses, Katz. Blew my mind. I'm not smart enough to digest it, but I said, do you think this is something of a scientific experiment? That is the failure of AI. You think this is a scientific experiment? Well, I said, no, I think the reason we're here is because we're here to make money. And now, in context of what bringing people into the enterprise, but for people, business would be a snap. So if you don't figure out how to manage people, it's a loser. I remember I had some insight into Apple. And, you know, Steve Jobs, whatever the heck else he might have been, pretty smart guy. Okay, we're going to change the box. We're going to do something, iPhone, whatever. And he would bring in everybody on earth into the darn meeting. And he pronounced, everybody speak. And everybody spoke up, or else you're not going to get invited again. And then we do what Steve wants anyway. The good part is that I was part of the design team. In my little world, somebody very smart enlightened me to one of the issues we had, which is we had a truly vertical business. When everyone did that and that and that, we just looked at it and we just kept doing what we did, which is did more of it and hopefully better and more and better. And pretty soon, the biggest issue was a people issue, which is, oh, heck, my boss is 3 years older than me, is making so much money. Where am I going? I look good. I want to get my bonus, but, and then his boss is only 5 years old. Where is he going? Where am I going? And in terms of leadership, in terms of bringing people into where they take ownership of the thing. So very smart guy. I think we got him from Heights. Why don't we create opportunity teams? I'm a simple guy. What do you mean? Okay, so we take a third level management person in operations. We take a senior VP of merchandising and we take a VP in operations and we put them together and say, we are having a creative issue over there. And they, and by the way, you, the lowest person on in the project, you run the team. And here's the goal. You will take two days out of your week to run this. Wait a minute, I have a job. Now, how am I going to, I'm going to be the boss of the senior VP of this or the VP of that, working on that. Those people are going to throw me out of the building. No, they're not, if they want the bonus. I have never in my career, I've never as a career, as a leader, if you will, have experienced that level of excitement. Those people bought into the whole notion that they need to fix that creative problem because that's how we make more money. And it's an astounding thing when people decline meetings. I'm busy. I'm doing my thing with the other guys. Say what? It's astounding. It's leading people to lead and to buy it. You know, the whole water cooler thing. Water cooler, hell. You know, I found out that half my management team was out to lunch two, three times a week. I couldn't reach them. They were meeting. They were excited. They were important. AI scares the heck out of most people. And most people think it's, listen, it's astounding to me when a guy I know really well runs IT for an organization. They do about $500 million a year. He showed me the wonderful letter he wrote took with the help of Gemini to one of the bigger suppliers. They are the biggest client for that supplier. And they're really annoyed because there's something's missing to fix it. And he wrote this two-page letter outlining this, and he showed it to me with a great deal of pride. I said, seriously, you're the biggest client. It's worth several $1 million a year to them. What are you doing? Well, what do you mean? AI, look at this great, I said, maybe you pick up the phone and say, hey, Steve, things are not going well. Can you come in Monday? I have three issues. Let's talk about them. See ya. Bye. Well, you can put that on a little email, you know. You think that will work? Yeah, but that's not – what is it not? It's not sophisticated AI output. What exactly are you trying to do? Get it fixed and shave two and a half cents off a unit. Okay. But, hey, listen – you can't get in front of that locomotive. But I am pleased to recount Dave McMillan, who runs Walmart. He has 2.2 million employees, who said, we are not going to lose any employees on account of AI. Not going to happen. 3 years from now, we'll have this 2.2 million people or we'll grow. And they'll be the same people. And they're not going to lose it. They're not going to lose their job. Nope. No, in fact, I just made a deal, he said, quote, I made a deal with Altman, and they're coming in, and there's a bunch of people going to train on AI to do better, and they will tell 2.2 million people, you want to learn how to use AI? Sign up.
Very cool.
How about we can all go to sleep because we're not going to lose our jobs? There's 2.2 million Walmart people.
Just imagine that, though. 2.2 million people in innovation from the bottom of the business. Yeah, it's like it's a real game changer. But even with these inspirational sort of stories. Right. Thank you, Steve. I knew you had masses of value there. I was just thinking, what is Steve going to say here? And I couldn't.
Time
I had
tell.
No idea. Well, sometimes I really have no idea.
Nor did Steve have any idea what he was going to say.
Well, it's to be honest, you always share massive value, or I wouldn't invite you to talk otherwise.
You know, I honestly, and I'm not trying to be anything other than honest. I get to learn from people like cats.
Same.
Once I start listening to you and I start reading you, I learn from that, and my job, if you will, is to try to put that in perspective, things I have seen or known. Because I will never have the theoretical wherewithal that you have, never. I will never become a good beginner at that. So this gives me a tremendous opportunity to learn. And I thank you, and I enjoy that immensely.
Yeah, and likewise. That's one of the reasons that I started podcasting was because I wanted to just ask all the dumb questions that I really didn't know the answers to. And I'm I'm getting better at not knowing. I mean, getting better at knowing the answers now, but it's great. Sorry, Katz, you were saying.
Not at all. Sorry, I'm ADHD, so I have a habit of just saying whatever's on my mind and blurting.
Please
so I apologise now.
Please do.
Me too.
Save me from myself. Please do.
No, but back to your point about this, creating these sort of cross-sector working groups and the impact that that had. I think one of my biggest aha moments with behavioural science and understanding the way the brain works is that we are tribal. What does that mean? That means that when we are with people who talk like us, who walk like us, who dress like us, who think like us, we produce neurochemicals that make us feel protective of those people. That's why the counter side of that, which I think is a massive point that every leader needs to think about all of the time, is that that very same neurochemical that makes you feel bonded to your tribe, your team, your department, whatever, also makes you behave in a defensively aggressive way to people who aren't in your team. So if you think about what that means in an enterprise where there's teams and departments and regions, one of the things I found work really well in my work is to bring people together in these working groups, but really spend time allowing them to get to know each other, to look each other in the eye, to feel each other, to get each other as human beings, but make sure they're from all over the lots of different parts of the kind of organizational structure. And then once you've got people to really get to know each other and trust each other, then you can start to co-create North Star. And I would disagree with you, Stephen, that it, just making money is not enough. It's not what gets us out of bed in the morning. It's who we're with. It's who, how we're working. It's what output we're making, whatever that is, whether it's making the best car or whatever. But you bring them into workshops, get them to really trust each other, get them to co-create their North Star so that everybody can see the same truth. And when they feel trusting enough, then they can surface and prioritize the blockers, the barriers, the behaviors that are getting in the way of that. And then, and this is the big then, they can start to co-create the solutions to those little things that they've identified themselves. And that's great because then they can go away and put those solutions into action and they can learn from that and bring those back. But the most important thing actually is it's the process itself. Because during that time of bringing these people from different parts of the organization, different levels, different departments, they become a mini tribe. So people don't have that push, you know, oh, I don't like it because I didn't make it. You're wrong because you're not one of us. And it's right. physiological.
You know, Katz, I, to digress a moment, I'm not going to disagree with you, but that's a snippet. We're here to make money. The resident detriment for the business is to generate profits. Without profits, altruism is not possible. Without profits, we can't feed families and all of that. So I look at that as just a fundamental idea. That said, without people, there's just nothing. It just doesn't work. And there's a lot of components to that picnic. You know, you can't be, if you are absolute mercenary, cutthroat mercenary, that only works when you have a business that's in imminent danger of failing, where you can say, I can save 200 families at the expense of 100. Then it's just straight line ordinary. I've known people in that world, you know, who looked at it so cold that it was scary. You know, temperature drops in the room where these are a lot of workout people. You know, I knew one man who took over a $4 billion business that was $2 billion in the hole. And 2 years later, he had an extra $1.5 billion in the bank. And when he started talking, the temperature dropped in the room. Mm-hmm. It was just so cold. By the way, I offered to work for him for absolutely free for a year for the privilege of attending his meetings. I'll carry the bags. I'll go to the cleaners, whatever, as long as I can sit in the room. Because to watch that was phenomenal. There's no disagreement. No disagreement. It takes it. without people, you're, you know, where are you going to grow a beard, multiple vulva, and drink umbrella drinks?
I've thought about doing that actually, but it's not going to happen now.
Well, we actually one of my best friend had a partner for 35 years was shopping for a place to live there, so we can is going to get really heavy and drink a lot of umbrella drinks. Problem is, I don't drink, so that plan fell apart because he wanted the drinking part. The whole notion of basic human need to belong. Yes. It's a big deal. You know, need for food, shelter, need to belong. I mean, if they're more than those top three, I'm not aware of them. I get that. Yeah. We try to run our businesses that way. It's a wonderful thing when you pull into a parking lot at a big event and a person says to you, "Hey, Steve, park here so you don't have to wait to get out." "Thank you. Do I know you?" "Yeah, I work for you. I work in that warehouse over there." And says, "Okay, now we've done something right. We've done something right." That happens to be one of the crowning glories of my little career, is to understand the relevance of our people and where they come from. Yes. And we nurtured all, we took people from kids to senior folks in the world, which is a good thing. I think that one of the questions you asked, Nathaniel, what are the jobs, if you will, professions, if you will, that are going to be really, really sought after, skills sought after by 2030. You may not believe this, but I think that one of my three, I'm not so sure if it's two or three, is human resources people. Now, I mean that in a rather significant, expansive way. Katz can talk about this for days, I'm sure. I mean the people who will know, who will either do it or counsel really solid leaders on the use, on the benefits of the human resource. The most important resource we have, it's human. It's not money, it's not capital, it's not anything else, it's human. And as we go through this significant change, for some cataclysmic where so much of what they do can be done by somebody else. Oh, heck, I don't want my next x-ray read by the guy I've known for 20 years who does it for a living. I want an AI bot to read my next x-ray. That's just a fact of life. And there are a lot of those examples. But I think the human resource professional will move into a role where those people will be able to understand and explain to us what is the absolute best relationship we can have with our people. Where do they live? What are the fears, needs, wants, desires? There's a confluence between their needs, fears, desires, wants, and what we can offer. And then we can have
interesting, isn't it? It leads into the human innovation wins. I was going to ask another question, but I think you guys have kind of answered most of that anyway, really, to be fair. But so onto the human innovation wins, right? What can humans do that AI fundamentally cannot? I mean, we've talked a little bit about that, but what do you think on that one, Katz? And why does it matter for 2030 and beyond?
So whatever you may think of WEF, I think a report that came out from them said what's going to be the most important things for leaders to focus on. And they are change readiness, they are resilience, they are agility, all of the things that we three all know. The faster changes, the more the organization needs to be ready for that. So the things that we can do and it can't do is, as Stephen just said, it's the people piece. It is the connection between people. It is the storytelling so that people are not scared of the tech and the way we're working. It's the collaboration piece. All of these things are social And they, to me, are the things every leader should be thinking about. How can we, and back to your point, Nathaniel, you know, the idea that everybody in the organization is there to think. I mean, God, when was Toyota thinking about we need to shift the way we work? Every single person needs to have making the organization better in their job titles. That was in 1946 or something, wasn't it? Here we are, and AI, I mean, you know, so there's a stat here. Apparently, MIT Media Labs in their latest report said that 95% of enterprise AI pilots have failed. They've got absolutely zero value. So let's stop thinking so much about AI, the kind of, you know, the ooh, new shiny thing. And let's start thinking about what is it we're trying to do as a company? And, you know, back to your point, Stephen, I think, who was it who said that a company's only job is to win and keep customers? And the only way you can win and keep customers is by making sure that your employee experience is absolutely top notch, because your employees are the interface with your customers. So, yeah, I think if it were me, I'd be focusing less on AI for AI's sake and more about how can we use AI to make sure that we're augmenting people so that we can do what we do best, which is connect, collaborate, create together.
You know, I think it's so critical what you said, because again, going back in time, at the very early onset of this internet thing, pretty much everybody I knew, except the geeks, and I say that with absolute love, they had no clue what the hell we're talking about. And everyone thought they were roadkill on the superhighway. I don't get it. Try explain a browser to your pediatrician in 1984. Say what? Now, one of the problems today, and as you said, the shiny penny, And of course, it takes some maturity to recognize that everything is green on the other side. Until you get there, you discover it's AstroTurf. Now, how many people, and this is something that that thought leaders like yourself will impact, which is, how do you take people, which is pretty much, well, most of us, from feeling, you alluded to this, feeling totally left out, feeling this AI thing is just taking over the world, and all I know is I can get help writing a letter, the cleaners is talking about AI, and I'm a physician, I still don't know anything about it. How do you say, well, here's what AI is, and here's the utility of it. And don't make this an ongoing scientific experiment, because you will fail. It's not what you do. So how can you use this? And how can you get all these smart people wrap their brains around how to use it? What is good? What is not good? What's use? What's abuse? What's a waste of time? The billions and billions of dollars of time are wasted today on people messing with AI at work. And I go back to not too many years, because remember, data is king. Data is everything. Hey, we were in the big data world 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Now, we didn't call it big data, but we had big data. And I remember the great transition. Data is king. Data is everything. Now, a couple of years ago, a couple of real smart people said, data is good, as is chocolate ice cream. Now, too much of that, it'll kill you. Chocolate ice cream will kill you. Now, so they said, so what is the Rubicon as to data? Because we are flooding the entire workforce with data. I don't care what you're doing, pushing a spreadsheet, there's more data. There's a lot of creative work that AI will do, but not the same thing. Just one moment is when some friend showed me this young man is got a job in an insurance company. They do a lot of legal work. He's a file clerk. the quintessential file clerk, because they have paper. They have to have paper. Courts like paper, so they have paper. The file clerk is creating a resume. So what do you, I'm the file clerk. I'm going to hire you because you're a file clerk. Okay, so what's the creative perspective on being a file clerk? As I said, you know, you need to understand that when you take that memo and put it in the wrong place, misplace it, that Superior Court judge doesn't care. You can't find it. You're toast. So let's look at it differently. As far as I'm concerned, you're in document management and preservation. You're not a file clerk. Just a creative perspective on the person who thinks they're just a file clerk. And then when they do take that mount of the paper and put it where they're supposed to put it, there's a different degree of care, understanding what the relevance of the job is. And I think that's true whether you're parking the car in the building or whether you're lecturing to a Fortune 100. I hope that we continue to nourish with all the great information that AI can provide the brains of the people around us and encourage them to push to get some level of independent thought. 99% of people are not really going to ever have independent thoughts, but if they think they can, I think it's massive. You know, that pushes you to greatness.
I like that a lot. It's quite exciting. I'm excited about the future myself. I think that people, as long as they carry on learning, continue to learn, and keep an open mind to the evolution of actually working alongside AI, because they are most people, apart from, you know, there are many people that are not going to use AI and that have no need to, and they are actually a lot safer at the moment. But once the robots start coming, you know, that's going to be a different thing when they can start actually doing manual jobs. And I don't know how far we are away from that, if I'm honest. That's something that is slightly concerning, if I'm perfectly honest. But I've got three questions for you, Kat. What's the biggest misconception leaders have about change, especially when technology is involved?
Oh, yeah, I think the greatest misconception is assuming you can just buy it and tell people to use it. It has never worked. It will never work. You either do change with people and take them with you on a journey to somewhere better, or they'll just resist it, or use it badly, or give you bad data.
100%. So what does the change-ready culture actually look like in practice then?
It looks like an environment where people are clear about what it is they're supposed to be doing, where they're responsible for it, where they are curious, where they're rewarded and respected for what they're bringing to the table, where they understand what their part of the pie is about, because otherwise we're all just rolling around trying to figure out where we fit and to the point. So I think the reward, the leaders are not there to say this way or the highway. The leaders are there to make sure that the company is investing in a consistent, intentional way to build the environments in which humans are going to give their best. Where they will continuously look for better ways of doing things, where they will continuously talk about the things that aren't working. As you just said, Stephen, change-ready cultures are psychologically safe and they're based on trust.
And what's one lesson you've learned from working across the UN, BBC and GSK about what really makes transformation succeed?
What makes transformation succeed is always when people have a very clear idea of why that transformation is happening, and they feel that they're part of the change and they're going on a journey which is going to be better for them.
Excuse me. I want to give, Cass, I want to give you something of an ambivalent, massive thank you, because I am shortly off to what I expect to be a very contentious hour and a half. By definition, it will be contentious. And I just realized that I'm wasting my time because I will be useless. Because I will sit there listening to people drone on, and I will be just grinding and processing everything you said about trust. So I'm going to be sitting in a room with people, and I'm going to have cats in my head, in my ear, sitting over my shoulder. So, you know. I want to say thank you because that's so enlightening for me.
Yeah.
I'm very black and white, you know, very proactive about things. And it's sometimes we do forget the absolute need to build trust before people have buy-in, you know. And I think that you highlighted that for everybody watching or listening.
My challenge to you is at the beginning of this meeting, at the beginning of every meeting I have, I say to each person, if it's not a huge group, what's making you happy? What's making you sad? And they go, and they're always really delighted to answer. And it takes a couple of minutes, but the conversation after that, because you've just broken the boundaries and you've created psychological safety, are entirely different. So even in the most contentious, difficult political moments, give it a minute. That's my challenge.
Okay, my challenge, of course. My challenge is assume for a moment that I go in, and then somebody smart says, so what makes you happy, what makes you unhappy? Out of my mouth immediately, being here with you is making me very unhappy. How is that meeting going to go?
Classic.
Well, I will try.
Sorry, if you are a leader who can see your team isn't working together as well as it could, or your technology transformation isn't having the impact it should, CATS has developed a human first toolkit and methodology that helps break through resistance and apathy. And you can find out more at her website, wearebeep.com. or connect with her directly on LinkedIn. And I want to thank you for joining me, both of you. Thank you very much, Steve, and thanks, Katz.
Thank you. Great talking with you.
If you value the insights on influential visions, you'll be pleased to know that that is just the public version. Inside Monday Influencer, the indispensable weekly guide to success in business, career, life, you get a weekly email, which also has an audio version narrated personally by us. You get early access to uncut interviews, behind the scenes footage and intel. You get critical insights, unlocking AI and technology for your success. You can download cheat sheets, checklists, and many, many audios, which will help you to become a better executive and a business person. Your risk is $1. Join us. The link is in the description. Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions.